Pope Benedict this week urged the Church to pray without ceasing for Christian unity, so that all believers may profess Christ as their Saviour. The Pope's appeal was based on the theme for the 2008 Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, which this year is marking its centenary. Pray without ceasing, taken from St. Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, is in fact the theme chosen for this centenary year. This yearly observance began back in 1908. It was known then as the Church Unity Octave and was initiated by the American Episcopalian clergyman, the Reverend Paul Watson, who converted to Catholicism a year later. From this small beginning 100 years ago, the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity has grown in scope and is now observed throughout the Christian community worldwide. Since 1966, it has been a joint project of the Catholic Church and the World Council of Churches. Each year, the Week of Prayer begins on January the 18th, which is the Feast of St. Peter's Chair, and ends on January the 25th, which is the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. Atonement Father James Gardner is director of the Graymore Spiritual Life Center in New York State, that contains the chapel where the very first observance of the Christian Unity Octave was held in 1908. He told me more about the origins and history of this yearly event and how it has evolved over the past 100 years. I began by asking him how this year's centenary is being marked.
Well, Graymore is the mother house and world headquarters of the Franciscan Friars and Sisters of the Atonement. It does contain the chapel, Our Lady of the Angels Chapel, where the Church Unity Octave was first observed in 1908. And so we will be using that chapel for a couple of events. Last Sunday, we had a small gathering to preview the Week of Prayer for our neighbors, who were really amazed and really excited about the fact that something that has started here locally, inauspiciously, has now spread throughout the world and has the endorsement and wholehearted support of both the Vatican and the World Council of Churches. But Graymore isn't the only place where there will be observances. There'll be observances in New York City that we found out about, observances in Washington, D.C., San Antonio, Texas. Most of the observances are prayer services, ecumenical prayer services involving Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, and evangelical clergy participating in them, clergy and congregations. But there are some other things that are going on as well, exchanges among churches where people can see where and how one another worships. So there's a lot of things going on. We've also had, by the way, a very successful hymn competition. Had 153 new hymns were submitted, two were selected based on the theme, That All May Be One, St. John's Gospel. And we also had an illustration competition where artists, over 50 artists, submitted their ideas of how to illustrate the theme this year called Pray Without Ceasing, that's from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. So a lot of things have already gone on in anticipation of the Week of Prayer. A lot of things are going on right now across this country and around the world. And we're really heartened that something that started here so inauspiciously 100 years ago, but with the devotion and the vision of the founders of Graymore, we're really heartened that this has picked up and is spread now throughout the world.
Well, as you say, it's moved on a long way in the last 100 years. But going back for a while to its origins, as you said, it began in quite a small way there at Graymore. And the founders, in fact, were Episcopalian, and then they converted to Catholicism, didn't they? But the actual Church Unity Octave, as it was known then, was more limited in scope than the present observance, wasn't it? Because it was a movement that explicitly prayed for the return of non-Catholic Christians to Rome.
Exactly. It was influenced by what was called, or what is called, return theology, which since the Vatican II, the Vatican Second Vatican Council, the Christian churches and the Catholic Church has moved past that, in retrospect, narrow concept of Christian unity. The original Church Unity Octave became the Chair of Unity Octave to reinforce this whole idea of Christian unity as return to Rome. And then Abbé Couturier in Lyon in the 30s, He had started what he called a universal week of prayer for Christian unity, and it took the Second Vatican Council to as one of the results of the decree on ecumenism was that both movements, what had become the Chair of Unity Octave and this universal week of prayer for Christian unity, they were merged into the one observance, January 18th to the 25th. And that was one of the results of the Second Vatican Council. So we've moved on. We've moved on past even not from only from return theology, but also we've moved on to see what some people have described as the wider ecumenism, the wider ecumenism being the encounter of the Christian churches with other religions, not just other churches, but other religions. In other words, people are challenged to go beyond the traditional established borders, and as one preacher pointed out recently, to see what God is doing behind these artificial barriers that we have put up.
Well, coming back to that theme of the artificial barriers and here this week of prayer for Christian unity, when it comes to ecumenism in general in the USA, how would you define its current state of health?
I'd say it's the current state of health in the ecumenical movement, it's good. I don't think it's visible enough, though. There's an awful lot that's going on every level, so much so that, for instance, a lot of things that people are doing, they just take for granted now, and they don't think of them as being specifically ecumenical, whether it's on a social level, meeting the needs of people in shelters and soup kitchens and that type of thing, to dialogues that are taking place, official, national, regional, local, neighborhood dialogues that are taking place, Bible study that's being done together. I just think that ecumenism has become so much a part of our experience over the last 40 years that we've stopped thinking about ecumenism as being something special. It's part of the way we live our lives and practice our faith. That's not to say, though, that there couldn't be more explicit forms of ecumenism that we can rest that it's already accomplished.
The problem sometimes mentioned about ecumenism, though, is that although Christians all agree in principle with the concept of being united, being one with Christ, in practice it's very difficult to make concrete progress towards breaking down those theological obstacles. And when progress does occur in this field, it's very, very slow. Does this tend to discourage people?
I think it tends to discourage impatient people. I mean, I think of a quote that I saw that Father Paul Watson, our founder, wrote many years ago. He died in 1940, so it was well before that he wrote this. And the quote is, "Patience must be allowed plenty of time to do her work perfectly." It's something I think that we can all think of as it's almost like a mantra to think about this, that we have to be patient because Christian unity is ultimately the work of the Spirit.
That was Father James Gardner, director of the Graymore Spiritual Life Center in New York State.
Come, Holy Spirit, we need you. Our brokenness, heal and make whole.
In Britain, Catholic Church leaders are also marking the centenary of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, with a series of special services up and down the country. The head of the Bishops' Conference's Committee for Christian Unity is Bishop Michael Evans of East Anglia. He told me more about how this centenary of the Week of Prayer is being marked in Britain.
Most of the things, of course, go on at local level in parishes where probably they're most effective, but most cathedrals would have special events. And certainly in Westminster Abbey, the four presidents of Churches Together in England, including the Cardinal, are leading a very special celebration to mark the centenary.
The Week of Prayer began, though, in quite a small way 100 years ago. It resulted from an initiative between two Episcopalian clergymen. But it's grown enormously since then, hasn't it? I mean, how much bigger have you seen it becoming, even in your lifetime?
It's grown a lot in our lifetime. I think we need to remember it started even before 1908, even Pope Leo XIII, way back in 1895, tried to get going a weaker prayer for Christian unity, I think between Ascension and Pentecost. So it's got very deep roots in the Christian tradition. And of course, Father Paul Couturier took it up in 1933, and World Council of Churches developed it. And 1966 onwards, Second Vatican Council, it really becomes something very important. And it's in the last 42 years, I suppose, that it's really taken off. At first with great enthusiasm, and I think because we're grinding now with church unity in a way, we're still moving forward, but the enthusiastic phase is not quite the same. It's a much more down-to-earth kind of approach.
Now, you talked about perhaps a waning somewhat of enthusiasm. Is that because people have become aware of the obstacles that stand in the way, particularly there in England, between the Anglican Communion and the Catholic Church, you know, and also the new difficulties that have arisen in that ecumenical dialogue, for instance, the ordination of women?
I think perhaps waning enthusiasm wasn't quite the right word. It's more that whenever you begin something, especially after 400 years of division, there was a great passion and a real thought that perhaps Christian unity was around the corner. We now know it's a very long path. It's that we need to keep on taking important steps, but it's a long way ahead. Full, visible, sacramental unity is a long way off. And therefore, that initial passion perhaps has waned. But there are still many, many people in parishes and in dioceses who are totally committed to Christian unity, and we need to keep that going. And I think Christian Unity Week is a way of spurring us on for the other 51 weeks of the year so that we really do keep going.
And can you give us some examples of the concrete ways in terms of initiatives and projects that you do perhaps in your diocese with the other Christian denominations?
Yes, certainly in East Anglia we are blessed with very good relationships between church leaders, very friendly relationships. In fact, we see ourselves as friends, I think, and that makes a big difference. When people see church leaders enjoying being with each other, enjoying each other's company, it really does witness to the unity we already share, as well as that desire that we grow into full unity. In Norwich, the two cathedrals there, the Anglican and Roman Catholic Cathedral, work very closely together. For example, we have annual services together. The two bishops meet regularly, and there's a joint pilgrimage between people from the Roman Catholic Cathedral and people from the Anglican Cathedral to Rome and to Italy and various other places in the world as well. And there's a general working together during the rest of the year.
To sum up, how do you feel about the future of ecumenism?
I think we know there are difficulties, and some of the things you mentioned just now are a good example of that. But Christian unity is so important that it's something we must not give up on. I think as the Holy Father put it the other day, it's not an option, it's a sacred duty. It's the Lord's mandate that we work for Christian unity.
That was Bishop Michael Evans of East Anglia.
I am the way, the truth and the life. I am your Lord. I am the Christ. I am the way, the truth.